Rothschild here on the Maggie Dawn Show. Maggie's out today. I'm delighted to be able to sub for her. Kind of her to ask me. Delighted also to have Angela Lang in the studio with me and Brian at the helm there in handling all the duties that he does all the time here for Civic Media. Angela Lang is Executive Director of BLOC, Black Leaders Organizing in Communities, and she's one of the best organizers and bravest organizers that I know. And a tremendous writer who writes for Dan Schaefer over at Recombobulation Area lots of times. And I saw a great column you wrote about how much you love Milwaukee.
Yes.
That was sweet, especially in the context of Trump later calling it such a horrible place to live.
I'll defend Milwaukee until I die.
There you go. We have CJ on the line. CJ's a person who calls in from the right sometimes to Civic Media. But I had lunch with CJ one day and Middleton, and it was not an unpleasant experience. So I'm taking your call, CJ. What you got?
Hey, nice to talk to you, Matt and Angela. Nice to talk to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you for taking my call.
No worries.
You know, when you speak of President Biden and he did such a courageous thing, he didn't resign. He was forced out. They didn't give him a choice. This wasn't an option for him. So claiming that he did something so courageous is, what you have to do, I guess. But we all know that he wasn't making a decision that he came to. He was forced to leave.
CJ, let me just jump in here and then you can come back. I mean, he could have, if he wanted to be just a stubborn SOB, he could have said, look, I was the only person who ran other than that one guy who got no delegates. I got all the delegates. I'm going to Chicago, and I'm going to be the nominee. I'm the president of the United States. I won this fair and square. Go get lost. He could have said that. And for a while there, he was kind of in a petulant mood, it seemed. And I give him this. It's awful to be betrayed. Betrayed by your friends, the people you've helped enormously in their careers, and then to have these people come out publicly against you, it must have really, got under his skin, as it would have gotten out of mind. But he could have said, look, I won it. I've got a lot of love in the party, and there was a lot of love, still is a lot of love in the party for Joe Biden.
Yeah.
And he didn't need to go. But go ahead, CJ.
Well, I appreciate that. Maybe, but when you see what is now happened, the coronation, because he wasn't primaried, you wouldn't even let a Kennedy run against him. I mean, come on. So this is about democracy? I don't think so. And as far as VP Harris goes, the border czar, what an accomplishment she's had. Record illegal, undocumented invasion. And you speak of that enforcing the law when these people broke the law, that speaks so highly. This was intentional. The border's intentional. And we're living Biden-Harris policies today. If you don't vote for Kamala, you are either racist or sexist. And that's what it's going to come down to, because you can't make it about policy. You can't. You have to make it about personality, because her record sucks.
Okay, CJ, we hear you. And I'm going to have Angela Lang of BLOC respond for me. And CJ, hit me up on my cell phone and we'll get lunch another time, okay?
Hey, CJ. I appreciate you calling in and challenging this conversation, because I think it's not always easy. And I think it's important to hear different perspectives. And so I have a follow-up question. When I see Republican folks or folks saying that they are voting for Trump be really upset that Kamala is basically the nominee, my question is, why does the other side care so much when you can be focused and you all have what you claim to be the greatest candidate? I think there's so many times that people talk about distractions, right? why do you care? And I also think that there's a certain, I think, assumption is that maybe the right is starting to feel threatened, and that's why they're outspoken, and that's why they actually care. Because if she wasn't seen as a threat, I don't think people would be as outspoken to her. So I'm just curious if that analysis is correct or not.
Well, I think people are freaking out. Go ahead, CJ. And then we got to go on, but go ahead.
Thank you, Matt. Well, I'd like to respond this way. DEI. We saw it with the Secret Service director who was...
You lost me already, CJ. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's too bad to go there, CJ. But anyway, we'll talk over lunch about everything. And now we got Ralph from Milwaukee. Let's hear what Ralph from Milwaukee has to say.
Afternoon. I was just going to comment that when it comes to the statement that the previous caller made about Biden being forced out, I think the other thing is that he himself realized he could probably not finish another four-year term predicated on what he knew of his own health. And so just saying that I'm not going to run, it sounds like you're being forced out. I don't think that was the case. I think he's admitting to himself that he couldn't finish another four-year term. And so why would you want to become a president and not be able to finish what you would be starting in a second term? Yeah. Or continuing what you've done through your first term. And so I disagree with them saying that he was forced out. Yeah, sure, there was pressure. Everybody gets pressure on everything when it comes to matters of significance. But I think he realized he could not finish a four-year term.
Yeah, Ralph from Milwaukee, thanks for that call. And I think you're right, but I think that realization came late to Biden. I think actually COVID might have helped him realize that. I mean, I had COVID 4 weeks ago, and it wasn't fun, even though it was the second time. And I was out, you know, for 3 or 4 days and felt like crap. And, you know, when you're feeling that bad, you start to think about, you know, I don't have energy for anything.
Yeah.
And so that might have crossed his mind.
I mean, I think no matter what, I think some folks have feelings about how it went down. And I think all of those feelings are valid. I know folks, family members that are very, very frustrated with and feeling that he was forced out. I think at the end of the day, we all know that there were conversations had behind closed doors. And whether he was forced out or not, the words had to come out of his mouth. He's the one moving out of the White House, right? It at the end of the day, whether it was his choice, whether he accepted it, which I think he wouldn't have done it had he not fully accepted it. So how it went down, yes, people can talk about that. But at the end of the day, I fully believe it was his decision. And like I said, he's the one that's going to have to address the nation and explain that.
Yeah, and I heard Bernie Sanders upset about how it went down.
Sure.
And saying that people did Biden wrong.
And I think that some of that is valid, too. As you talked about betrayal, you know, Biden has been around politics for quite some time, decades even. So you have those relationships. But unfortunately, what they say, no permanent friends, no permanent enemies in politics, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, he helped everybody, though, as he said in one of his speeches 2 weeks ago, you know, want a friend in Washington, get a dog. And he's needed a dog over the last few weeks. I thought that was kind of funny. We've got Cam from Appleton on the line. Cam, what do you want to say on this?
Hey, I guess I'm kind of disappointed that CJ is even allowed to try to push the over the border narrative with it being an invasion. When's the invasion coming? When's the invasion arriving?
It's not.
I've been hearing for years that the caravan's on its way. CJ, when are they showing up? Are they going door to door? Are they mixing themselves in with the Mormons? Are you getting door to door invasion salesmen? What's happening, man? Talk to us. Tell us what's happening. Tell us how you're impacted by this, because I have not heard a single time that you've explained that it's something impacting you specifically.
Cam from Appleton, thanks for that call. And, you know, invasion, such a militaristic word. Donald Trump
intentional
used the word invasion 13 times in his RNC speech. I had to Google that, but there it was. What do you think, Angela?
You know, I think going back to all of that, it's like that question of like, why do people in Wisconsin particularly potentially care about immigration, especially if you are not an immigrant yourself? The only conclusion I can come up with is like the words like invasion and people talking about the mass caravans and all of this. It's just a funnel to the far right. It is a very quick funnel, and it is just a way for them to live out their racist rhetoric, but hide behind policy to do so. Policy that there is no southern border in Wisconsin. Right. Not saying people shouldn't be concerned, right? Like, there's loved ones, there's kids that have been in cages, families are separated. That's how we should care about it, because we should care about what is happening to the people. But to say that you are in direct threat is, I think, disingenuous, and it is just a way to use your racism and hide behind policy and actually say racist rhetoric.
And let's be real. If they are going to have mass deportation and close the border, the dairy industry in Wisconsin is going to crash.
Collapse.
The restaurant industry in Wisconsin is going to crash. And a whole bunch of other industries.
The economy.
Are going to crash.
I think people talk about, oh, they don't pay taxes. They pay sales taxes.
Right.
Like, the economy, it's interesting, again, going back to the fact that the idea that we live in a very different reality that is rooted in facts and science, and other people's reality is just rooted in racism and white supremacist rhetoric.
I haven't heard an actual how this is going to happen. They had those pre-made signs, mass deportation, but every time we say, how are you going to do that? Are you going to use the National Guard? Are you going to use the armed forces? Like, how is this going to happen?
Well, what scares me is they might figure it out, Brian. If Trump gets elected, he might use Homeland Security. He might use the military. He might, out the insurrection.
That's great, because a lot of the military is, I don't know,
the amount of cruelty that could happen under a Trump administration with the mass deportation and with a lot of other policies is almost incalculable. Angela Lang, I want to talk about a serious related subject, and that is police violence against Black folks in America. Black folks in Wisconsin and nearby.
Yeah.
That must be something that's on your mind a lot. I know during the RNC, we had the shooting of Samuel Sharp by not Milwaukee cops, Ohio cops.
Nope.
And we've had just over the last 48 hours video of a woman in Illinois, Sonia Massey, in her own kitchen being gunned down by cops simply for mouthing off to the cops.
Yeah.
It was just one of the grossest things ever. We had Devontae Mitchell at the Hyatt Regency. This has got to stop, and I want to talk about that when we come back.
And because we are a people-powered campaign, that is how you know we will be a people-first presidency.
Matt Rothschild here on the Civic Media Radio Network, the Maggie Dawn Show. Maggie's out today, so she has been kind enough to let me get behind the mic, and I am delighted to still have in the studio with me Angela Lang, Executive Director of BLOC, Black Leaders Organizing in Communities. God, we should do a radio show together sometime. That'd be fun.
I'm down. Absolutely. There's lots to talk about.
That would be great. And you can join us if you are in your office or in your kitchen or in your car, as long as you're not driving too fast. 855-752-4842. Right before the break, I raised a very difficult question, which is just this hideous police violence against Black folks in America. And it just must, as a Black person, it just must be horrifying for you to see this time and time and time again. I remember Doc Rivers saying, I'm just so tired of this. I'm just so tired of this after the George Floyd murder. And yet it keeps coming up.
Yeah. I was exhausted this morning. I woke up and it took me a little longer to get out of bed. And I did different radio at 7 a.m. It's just the whole world just feels very exhausting. And I think folks, if people have seen my previous comments about Sam Sharp's shooting, during the RNC, folks may know that I have very strong feelings about our city leadership and the failure of the city leadership to keep our community safe when they had said for time and time again, everything will be fine. Don't worry. I wrote my first op-ed that literally said, do not bring the RNC convention to Milwaukee in May of 2022. And I was not the only one that shared those sentiments. And it seemed very negligent that it felt that we were kind of gaslit and told just to be quiet. It's going to be great for the economy. Everything's going to be fine. Like, what are you really worried about? That just the gaslighting.
Even that didn't turn out either.
Right. I mean, also that, like, the one thing you told us to basically, you know, shut up is like, no, it'll be worth it in the end because economically, and we didn't even get that. But I would also like to clarify that there is no dollar amounts that would have been worth it if we lost a local community member. And I feel, you know, sick to my stomach to know that our leadership, specifically our mayor, seemingly with his comments and his reaction, seemed to take the side of the out-of-state law enforcement officer that said, well, at least, you know, the officer saved a life that day. But Milwaukee lost a community member. And it's so strange and quite frankly disgusting to hear that as the mayor of Milwaukee, and just to know what happened at the Hyatt with Devontae Mitchell just a few weeks before. And then just, you know, broadly, as you mentioned, Sonia Massey's killing and just how brutal I've heard that it was, and I haven't seen the video. And we're tired, we're exhausted. And especially, you know, with the RNC and Sam Sharp shooting, it could have been avoided. It was an out-of-state cop, mm-hmm. and he was unhoused. Two things that were directly impacted from the RNC. I'm not blaming the far right, for example. I'm blaming the convention itself.
And it wasn't even in the protected zone either.
The cop was a mile away from the security perimeter. And I immediately called, you know, the governor's office and said, what are you all thinking? Like, we have thoughts. And, you know, they seem to also have questions. And I also made the pitch to them that I'm aware that when there's an officer involved shooting, an outside law enforcement agency investigates. I don't think it can be handled with just an outside agency. And I think there needs to be a Department of Justice investigation with the fact that there were multiple law enforcement agencies, Secret Service, all of that, and the amount of resources, both locally and statewide, that had been put into this. I think it deserves due justice, and there needs to be an investigation of why those law enforcement officers chose to discharge their weapon immediately outside of the security perimeter when they weren't supposed to be there in the first place.
Yeah, it happened real fast. I saw the video. Yeah. Anyone can look up the video.
Very
the
fast.
Shooting of Samuel Sharp. I'm speaking with Angela Lang, Executive Director of Block. We've got Troy from Mount Horeb who's on the line. Troy, what do you got to say?
Hey, first of all, you guys really do a great show, and you were right. You guys should be doing this more often.
Thank you.
I was happy that you let CJ go long enough to throw out the DEI talking points that they've been saying ever since this all went down, because, you know, he hadn't said it yet, and I'm like, come on, you can do it.
Yeah,
and I knew it was coming. You know?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I just wanted to call you up and tell you guys you do a great job and throw that out there. So
thank you.
Have a good day.
Much appreciated. You too.
Thank you. That's Troy from Mount Horeb. We do appreciate that. Yeah, CJ, when he gets to the talking points, it's time to unplug him.
I mean, I just never understand the DEI. Like, so you don't want people to have a full understanding and critical thinking around our history and racism, which would make our whole country better. And the only reason you don't want that is because the role you and your ancestors played in that, it would not make you look good. It is. We don't do our country any service by limiting history, especially when it feels that history is repeating itself. You know, people have talked about like the 68 convention for quite some time mm-hmm. in Chicago. And I think it's so important to look back into history. And history, I think, helps us make sense of today. But it's very clear that the far right doesn't want that.
I agree with that. And then on the Chicago analogy, I think people are drawing it too tight. They said, well, you know, Humphrey got the nomination. There are these riots in Chicago. There's no way the Democrats are going to win.
Yeah.
They didn't win in 68. Look, it's a totally different time.
Yeah.
It's a totally different spirit right now.
It is.
Kamala Harris taking over here. and the exhilaration that's just across the board from the most conservative Democrat to the most progressive person in Wisconsin, at least on my Facebook page, if that's any indication.
Yep.
I mean, I'm hearing it all across the board. And I think, as Rachel Maddow said last night, that Kamala Harris is going to be the next president of the United States.
Yeah. I think the amount of messages that I had when people were like, we're going to win. And I'm like, you know what? I do feel good. And I'm just so energized by how energized first-time voters are. I'm in this, you know, Black Women for Kamala Facebook group. That's got like a lot of folks on it, and just hearing folks be really excited and organizing themselves and connecting with other folks in their industries. And it's really beautiful. And I haven't seen folks find out ways to get involved and organize like this this whole time.
Yeah, we're going to hear more from Kamala Harris's speech that she gave at the West Dallas Central High School after the break. I'm also going to just talk briefly about gerrymandering. Because that's Maggie Dawn's focus this week on voting rights. She's doing this incredible thing saying there are 100 good things that Biden and Harris have done. And for those folks who tell you they haven't done anything for me, or Biden did nothing, or the administration did nothing, she's got a list 100 miles long here, 100 items long. And it's quite impressive. So I want to add a little bit on gerrymandering. I'm Matt Rothschild. I'm subbing in here for Maggie Dawn on The Maggie Dawn Show. And I'm joined delightfully by Angela Lang of Block. And we'll be right back after the break.
Generations of Americans before us led the fight for freedom. And now, Wisconsin, the baton is in our hands.
Hey, Matt Rothschild here on The Maggie Dawn Show. That's Maggie's theme song, soon to be Kamala Harris's theme song. I just saw on CNN that Beyonce has given her the rights to use that
which
song.
Says a lot.
What does it say to you, Angela?
I am wondering if at some point between November, if Beyonce will actually come out and say the thing. Will we see the two of them on stage somewhere? I don't know. I can only hope. And that would be a sight. I hear the Swifties are also organizing. If the Beehive and the Swifties come together, that itself, and the AKAs, she's got it unlocked.
Yeah.
She's got it.
Could make all the difference. Matt Rothschild here with Angela Lang of Block. If you heard Kamala Harris speak today, give us a call, 855-752-4842. And by that, I mean either in person or on the Civic Media Radio Network or on CNN or whatever. We had a text from Matt from Germantown. He said the rally was great today. Had a good time. So many people were so excited. I mean, that's what I'm feeling and seeing, the excitement. I haven't seen this for years. Other people have mentioned it. Angela, you mentioned it to me. I haven't seen it since Obama's first run.
Yeah, I think for me, my first ever election was Obama in 08, and that was like significant for young folks. And, you know, a Black girl with a white mom that also lost her mom to cancer, it felt very like it felt very represented. And the level of enthusiasm, I think it's different because I think there's this, you know, overarching dark cloud of fascism that we have to organize around in a way that we didn't. in 08, but the level of folks wanting to step up and participate and organize their families and be the political person in their family and make donations where they can, the fundraising numbers and the organizing Zoom numbers, I think are tremendous. And I think the only thing I can really compare it to is Obama in his first election.
Forgive me, but when did you lose your mom?
In 2010.
Well, that must have been brutal.
Yeah, it was 10 days after I turned 21. So anniversary is in a couple of weeks, actually. But one of my fondest memories is sitting back. I wouldn't say that we were like a political household, but we talked about politics a lot. You know, we would stay up late and talk about what we wanted to see in the world. And I started to get more and more political, and we kind of be like, okay, we're both voting for this person, right? Yeah. Or my mom's like, I haven't heard about this person. Who is this person? Oh, wait, I know this. So very fond memories of being able to actually vote with her in my first election, too.
Yeah, I took great joy in bringing my kids to the voting booth before they could vote.
Yeah.
And then I took my daughter to the Iowa caucuses when Obama was running the first time. She had just turned 18.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a thrill and a half.
What, yeah. What gets the kids to vote? That sticker. It's that sticker. You give them that sticker and they are happy, happy, happy.
I remember as a kid, too, I was like this, I voted sticker. It felt like a badge of honor. Like it was very exclusive. You did a thing. People looked at you and kind of winked at you a little bit more if you had that I voted sticker a little bit.
And I like the cookies in the church basement.
Also that, if you're a poll observer and all of that, too. Yes. And the poll workers are great. Also, shout out to them for having to navigate a really intense political landscape. But then for a while, there's always changing rules. Thank goodness we have drop boxes again, right? But that's also something they need to get retrained up on and answer those questions. So with things that are always moving, thank goodness we have good poll watchers and folks that are able to keep up.
Yeah, and thank God for the liberals who got on the Wisconsin Supreme Court and all those who did the work to get them there, because it's made a whole lot of difference.
Yeah.
A whole lot of difference in this state, including on the issue of gerrymandering that I just want to talk about a little bit, because we know how the maps were rigged in 2011. The Republicans brought in some guy, a scholar from Oklahoma of all places, with some magic software to tilt the maps in their favor. Robin Voss and Devin Lemahieu then did it in 2011. Yep. I was there when they were talking about their rigged maps. They were the only two people in the whole Capitol who testified in favor of their maps. There were 200 of us who were testifying against them, and still they rammed them through. But thankfully, with the new Wisconsin Supreme Court, with Jill Karofsky and Janet Protasiewicz there, they were able to throw out those rigged maps, and we were able, finally, to get decent maps here. And Joe Biden and Kamala Harris want to ban partisan gerrymandering nationally. That's one of the great things they're for. This is in the Freedom to Vote Act, which has a lot of other great voting rights elements to it. Jim Santel talked about some of those yesterday on this very program. But here about the gerrymandering part, you know, they're going to outlaw the rigging of maps to materially favor one party. This is in the Freedom to Vote Act, that will become law if Democrats get the White House, if Democrats get the House, if Democrats keep the Senate. They would also say that you cannot take into consideration when you're drawing a map where the candidates live. I mean, because this is a standard map rigging, you know, draw a map to favor your favorite politician or yourself if you're drawing the map. And it would prohibit them from redrawing districts mid-decade unless a court, as did in Wisconsin, tosses out the rigged maps. Because then, of course, if by chance you were able to capture the two chambers and you had the governor's chair, as they did in 2010 here, but if it had happened, say, in 2014, they could just redraw them themselves. The last thing is you got to have public hearings. All those are good things. Yeah. Another reason why Kamala Harris should be elected president and why Democrats should be able to take over the House and keep the Senate, so we can ban partisan gerrymandering once and for all. Because, of course, the U.S. Supreme Court punted on this one. It could have banned gerrymandering if Chief Justice Roberts wanted to, but of course he didn't. He's a hack. He's a right-wing hack, as he showed us forever in that immunity case, which will forever be to his shame. But we can do it legislatively if we get the power.
Yeah.
So that's where we are. I want to hear some clips from the inspiring speech that Kamala Harris gave today at the West Allis Central High School. So, Brian, let her rip.
The path to the White House goes through Wisconsin. Yes, it does. So, Wisconsin, I am told as of this morning that we have earned the support of enough delegates to secure the Democratic nomination. Before I was elected vice president, before I was elected United States Senator, I was elected Attorney General of the state of California, and I was a courtroom prosecutor before then. And in those roles, I took on perpetrators of all kinds. Predators who abused women, fraudsters who ripped off consumers, cheaters who broke the rules for their own gain. So hear me when I say, I know Donald Trump's type.
That is just a killer, killer little bitch there. I mean, he's got to be hating that. You know he's squirming. You know he's going to Truth Social every time he hears that.
I love that so much.
It's wonderful, isn't it?
It's so good.
She gave that yesterday, and she gave that again today here in Wisconsin. And you know you're going to hear it a lot more.
Oh, yeah.
You know you're going to hear it in Chicago at the Democratic Convention. And that's the kind of intelligence, wit, strength, savvy that we're all waiting for and hoping for, and that she's going to be able to deliver. And that's why so many of us all across the progressive board and Democratic board are so excited about this Kamala Harris candidacy. We haven't heard someone take it to Trump like that in a long, long time.
And we all know he doesn't like to be held accountable. He's not used to being told no. I used to joke around when he was first elected. I said, Donald Trump is what happens when white privilege goes unchecked.
Absolutely.
You stumble your way into the presidency because no one ever told you no. Or, like, also, I just feel
white rich privilege, too. I mean, this is a white, super rich guy, silver spoon in his mouth, was able to bully and bribe and outlawyer anyone who ever challenged him. I mean, he must have been a pain on the playground. That's all
I was
saying.
I was thinking that. I was like, wow, no one has actually, like, stepped to him.
Right.
In whatever way that means. No one's really like stepped to him, and it shows, right? And the folks that he surrounds himself with, and you know, it just feels like negative. Like, I don't think I've thinking about it. Has anyone heard Trump say anything positive? Like, in the course of his career, anything positive? I know he's made some questionable comments about his daughter, but like, has he ever, like, you don't see this man smile. Like, the jokes he cracks are racist and at other people's expenses.
Yeah.
They're mean. Whereas, like, Kamala has a little bit of, like, a breath of fresh air and the light, and you can hear it from the applause. That roar of the applause says it all, in my opinion.
Angela, I do have to tell you, I do have a sound clip of Donald Trump being very positive on somebody.
Uh-oh.
I think it's very telling as well who it is, just so you know.
Michael Cohen is a very talented lawyer. He's a good lawyer in my firm.
So he can be positive
when it benefits him, and he has a personal agenda, but he's never said anything positive about, like, the country outside of the traditional God bless America, which he has to say.
And that was what was so shocking at the RNC, because they were saying what a selfless person he was. Here's the most selfish man in America, the ugliest American who ever lived. And they were making him out to have all these virtues of selflessness. Oh, he doesn't need to run. He's a billionaire. He could be enjoying life down in Mar-a-Lago, but he's running because he loves this country so much, and he loves you so much.
No, he's running because he's selfish and wanted power.
Wanted power and wants to stay out of jail. And that's the other thing. I mean, you mentioned accountability. You know, Merrick Garland was so slow on accountability that they've totally, you know, ruined this chance to make Trump accountable for all that he's done. And that's a real shame, because it looks like he's going to skate on all the cases. I hope it's not true, but it's very possible, especially after the immunity decision at the U.S. Supreme Court. And this guy has never, and he's almost 80 years old, had to face any accountability for anything grotesque, that he illegal, mean, cruel thing that he's done in his life.
Like, no one has ever put him in his place, and it shows. Like, sometimes when you say something wild and off the wall, someone checks you and you're like, oh. And you straighten up real quick and you don't do it again. That's never happened with him at all. And I think something that I think is also interesting, the folks that, you know, we talked about his cult-like behavior and, you know, folks saying that he was so selfless. I think what's also fascinating to watch is the like evangelicals or the folks, and I knew this was going to happen after the shooting, the folks that were like, oh, there was a divine intervention. He was saved by God. Thus, he has to be the president. And I caught that. And I was like, I wonder if they're going to lean into that in the RNC. And they did a little bit.
Oh, they totally did
that. And I'm like, ooh.
And he leaned into it, too.
Yeah. And I'm like, okay, this is going back to cults. Like, this is very scary. Again, outside of reality. But then also thinking that, like, this man is somehow, like, anointed by God. And what people are willing to do if that is their reality and they think that's fact.
And it was there before the assassination attempt.
Right,
I was driving
right.
around in Southern Dane County. My wife and I saw this sign that said, God bless America. He capital H, mm-hmm. gave us Donald Trump.
Yikes.
And you hear it evidently in right-wing white evangelical churches.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to argue with when they bring out the God card.
Like, what do you say to that? You know, and I think that's just like a bigger indicator that folks really want to turn this country back to a just Christian, I would argue, extremist. Like, not to downplay it, but like I watch some TV sometimes every once in a while. But like Handmaid's Tale, right? I feel very reminiscent of The Handmaid's Tale. And there was a series or a season where it started talking about how we got here. And I feel like we're living in those moments, those flashback moments right now a little bit.
Yeah, it's not a comforting time for me as an atheist Jew.
Sure.
A long time. I mean, they're not speaking to me. And so it is a real problem of Christian nationalism that my first guest today, Nancy McLean, was talking about. And we'll be right back to talk more about Kamala Harris and the big election coming up. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show. All across the Civic Media Radio Network, I've been speaking with Angela Lang, Executive Director of Block.
Keep on running, cause the winner don't quit on themselves.
But Donald Trump wants to take our country backward. He and his extreme Project 2025 agenda will weaken the middle class. Like, we know we gotta take this serious thing. Can you believe they put that thing in writing?
This ain't Texas. Alexis, and throw your keys up.
Hey.
Stick around, round, 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 round. And I'll be damned if I can't slow dance with you. Come pull some
Matt Rothschild here on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. That's Beyonce. The Texas Hold'em song, which is a favorite of mine, Brian knows, because I am a Texas Hold'em player and I'm playing tonight.
Nice.
And I'm here with Angela Lang, Executive Director of Block, who's swaying to the music.
I love it. It's been great.
Yeah. It's great having you this last hour and a half, which is more than you bargained for, I think.
I mean, we just
been
talking.
What I wanted. So we've been talking a lot about Kamala Harris and her great talk this afternoon at the West Allis Central High School. Before we get to a few more clips, I want to read a couple texts. Cam from Nina says, I recommend people go look at the questioning bit on YouTube of Kamala Harris versus Bill Barr. That was great. Also, her Brett Kavanaugh.
I was going to say, I just referenced the Brett Kavanaugh one. I was like, that was when I was like, ooh, okay, we have a powerhouse on our hands.
Yeah, she said, are there any laws governing male bodies?
Yeah.
And he just squirmed. Let's play it. We're going to play it a second because Brian.
Can you think of any laws that give government the power to make decisions about the male body?
I'm happy to answer a more specific question. But
I'm gonna.
Yeah, right.
There are medical procedures.
Okay. That the government has the power to make a decision about a man's body?
I thought you were asking about medical procedures that are unique to men.
I'll repeat the question. Can you think of any laws that give the government the power to make decisions about the male body?
I'm not thinking of any right now, Senator.
Ouch.
Listen, I'm not for lots of reason, mostly my views on criminal justice system. I'm not a fan of prosecutors for reasons, but sometimes I think in government, when there needs to be some prosecution of our elected officials, and having them go through the criminal justice system and actually have these court cases and being held accountable and, you know, sent to task and have to answer these questions, like, that's where a prosecutorial background comes in handy. And that, I think, is what our government needs right now.
And the skill set in debate is going to be something beautiful to watch.
I mean, she probably was also on the debate team. I know a fellow debate team folks, when I meet them, she had her points ready to go. She knows. She was a prosecutor. That was her job.
Yeah, she does. I got a text from John from Oshkosh saying, this is the first time I made financial contributions to a politician, Joe Biden, Tammy Baldwin, and now Kamala Harris. I'm so excited for this campaign, John says. But also he feels bad for Biden, as I think a lot of us do.
Yeah. Again, I think, you know, we said this before that like multiple things can be true. People can feel bittersweet about Biden. People can, you know, feel excited for Kamala Harris. People could also feel a little bit of pause for her previous record and still be excited at the same time. All of that is true.
Got a text from Matt from Germantown about the conversation we were just having about God choosing Trump. He says he was saved by God. Where is God at mass shootings? Where was God at Sandy Hook? Which is a real tough one right there.
Yeah.
The stuff that we're hearing at the RNC, making him out to be selfless. And then the other thing they made him out to be was he's the most sensitive male in America. That's what, you know, Laura Trump was saying. That's what Kellyanne Conway was saying. That's what Huckabee Sanders was saying. I mean,
sensitive in the toddler way.
Right. Like he's a brat and throws temper tantrums, but I know sensitive men. Okay. And I like some sensitive men. He is not a sensitive man.
No, they made him out to be Alan Alda. Just, come on, man.
He's the most egotistical, power hungry maniac.
Yeah. I wasn't buying the extreme makeover episodes that we had to watch for 3 days straight or 4 days straight last week. That was something awful. Tell our listeners a little bit more about BLOC, your own organization.
Yeah, so we started in November of 2017. We're a year-round civic engagement organization really dedicated to educating and empowering and building relationships and building long-term Black political power. So where there's canvassers a couple weeks or a couple months before an election, we're year-round. We make sure that we still continue to talk about issues, and we have a group of what we call ambassadors. I always say that they're canvassers on steroids. They do so much work, and they are put through 30 hours of training before they're even allowed to knock a door, and then get regular training and research assignments to make sure that they're keeping up with current events so they can have really deep conversations out in the field. And just today, we even took a little bit of a break, and we volunteered over at Guest House and tended to their garden, heard about some of the work that they do and how they service also unhoused and transitional populations as well. So, you know, it's not just political. We have our back to school events coming up and other things in the community. We had a Wellness in the Park event. But, you know, I think for me, all of that community building is partly political because it's seen as an act of resistance for us to come together too.
And one of the things I admire most about it, and you were alluding to, it's not something you do right before an election.
Yeah.
And you're not coming in from the outside. You're not parachuting in from Washington or New York,
right,
thinking you know it all and telling people how to go door to door in your own community. Mm-hmm. You live in the community, your staff lives in the community, you go door to door constantly within the community, and you hear from people and you understand where people are coming from. That's a much more effective way to do political organizing than what we've seen traditionally from the party, for instance, or campaigns that are badly run. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely less transactional. You know, people come into our communities and try to exploit our votes. And I think that there was a real lesson. I've been saying this the last like day or so when people ask me, I think there was a lesson that the Democratic Party learned in 2016. Look at how many times the campaign has been here since then. And I think being able to have that year-round presence allows us to be that trusted messenger. It allows us to have a pulse on the community on a year-round basis, and also being able to build with each other. And we also know that some of these conversations, Black folks are sometimes are like, why am I even a part of politics? Nothing is happening. It takes a lot to persuade somebody, and that's why we have to have a year-round focus too.
Yeah, how do you pierce that cynicism?
One, I always tell folks, acknowledge it. I understand. We need to get out of the habit of shaming voters, figure out why, and then engage them regularly until they come along. And there is a way to do it. And I think shaming voters is not helpful, but being able to say, okay, I hear you. Sometimes that's me. And let me tell you about some of these things. And it may take multiple conversations.
Yeah. Shaming doesn't work. Eat your broccoli doesn't work.
Yeah, no.
You got to listen and acknowledge people. It's been great having you with me last hour.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
I'm Matt Rothschild. I've been speaking with Angela Lang, Executive Director of Block. I want to thank Angela for helping me out so much today. I want to thank Brian in the booth who helps me out every time I'm
here. Thanks, Brian.
I want to thank Maggie Dawn for letting me be behind the mic on the Maggie Dawn Show. I want to thank Nancy McLean, who is also one of my guests. I want to thank Kamala Harris for her tremendous speech today at the West Allis Central High School. The Devils are next.
Yes.
Please hang on.
So Wisconsin, ultimately in this election, we each face a question. What kind of country do we want to live in?